I wanted to start it is I would give them the opportunity to introduce my boss or boss's boss. And I'm very honored to do that. I'm very honored to stand on the same stage with the governor. Thank you, governor. And I'm glad to be here in San Francisco. Beautiful day, sun shining through the fog. That's a good sign. In doing this introduction, I'd like to recognize that we are reaching a tremendous milestone in renewable energy in California. It is a milestone that begins to address energy security in California by producing the infrastructure in renewable energy and competing in the emerging technologies. It is a milestone that works on climate change by reducing greenhouse gases. It is a milestone that works on infrastructure and improving and renewing our infrastructure. It is a milestone that provides jobs, all to the positive, all to the good. And it's based on a state and federal partnership, and it's a partnership that we can be very, very proud of. It's a partnership that has produced more than a dozen renewable energy projects in California on public lands in just the last 4 years. It is a partnership that has produced 15 gigawatts, that's gigawatts with a G, in renewable energy projects in California, and 5 of those gigawatts on public lands. It is a partnership that is developing the first ever landscape level plan that seeks to balance both development of renewable energy and conservation on 22 million acres in the California desert. The Bureau of Land Management, and I can say this on behalf of all of us here, would like to thank Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar for his leadership, for the direction, for his commitment to the Smart from the Start strategy that is pointing us to a renewable energy, clean energy economy. It is a strategy that seeks to engage with the state, with local authorities, with tribes, with communities of people to find solutions and solve problems. It is a strategy that has proven results over the last 4 years and a strategy that has promise for the future. My view, in a 4-year tenure, Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar has been a great friend to the people of California and to Americans that are looking for action, action on the energy front, the environment, and the economy. So please join me in welcoming Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar.
Thank you very much, Jim Kenna, and to all the BLM personnel who worked on this. These three permits embodied in these records of decision today, as well as all of the stakeholders in the state of California, and particularly Governor Brown and the leadership of the state of California. As part of President Barack Obama's All of the Above Energy Strategy to expand domestic energy production, the Department of Interior and the State of California have developed a unique partnership that is built on our common clean energy goals. It is truly a model for the rest of the nation. By combining our forces, the United States and the State of California have aligned federal and state permitting and environmental review processes to expedite utility-scale solar, wind, geothermal, and transmission projects on public land in California. Today, I'm pleased to announce the approval of 3 additional renewable energy projects on Interior-managed lands. When built, these projects will deliver 1,100 megawatts of power, enough to run more than 340,000 homes, and help support more than 1,000 jobs through construction and operations. Now, to put that in context, those 3 records of decision sitting over here on the table will essentially allow the equivalent of what is more than 3 regular-sized power plants to come online. That is the effect of the decisions that we are making today. Now, 2 of these projects are located here in California. The 750 megawatt McCoy Solar Energy Project near Blythe would generate enough clean power for 225,000 Southern California homes and employ an estimated 600 workers during peak construction. This project will be one of the largest projects of its kind on Earth, on the 60-megawatt Desert Solar Farm near Desert Center would generate enough electricity to run 45,000 California homes, and it will employ several hundred workers also during construction. Now, both of these California projects are located in the Riverside East Solar Energy Zone. That is one of the 17 solar energy zones we established, which we worked on with the conservation community, many of whom I see here in the audience, as well as with the industry, who felt that if we could identify these sweet spots for solar energy development, it would make it easier for us to be able to permit these projects. Now, the 17 solar renewable energy zones encompass 285,000 acres of public lands across six western states, and these zones will provide the incentives for development in the future to occur there. They are the blueprint, the Bible, if you will, of where solar energy will go on the public lands in the years ahead. Now, the third proposal that we have approved today is a wind project, and it is not located here in California, but it is a stellar project that we've worked on for a long time, and it is near Searchlight, Nevada. It is a Searchlight wind energy project located about 60 miles southeast of Las Vegas, and that 200-megawatt project will provide about enough power for 70,000 homes. I want to spend just a few minutes speaking a little bit about the big picture here. Under the great leadership of the counselor of the Department of Interior, Steve Black, and Janaya Scott, and people who worked on his team, we have moved mountains and made great strides, really, over the last 4 years. I'm very proud of the work that we've done. When we came into Interior in January 20th of 2009, renewable energy did not exist as a program or priority within the Department of Interior. There was a one-lane view of what we ought to be doing with energy. We came in to change the world, and in so many ways we have been able to do that. And we have been able to do that in particular in the world of renewable energy. Now, at this point, we have approved 37 privately operated facilities that are strengthening local economies by generating good jobs, providing reliable power. Nationwide, these projects include 20 commercial-scale solar facilities, 8 wind farms, and 9 geothermal plants, with associated transmission corridors and infrastructure to connect to established power grids. Now, that's a lot of power, and these projects now are becoming the examples to the rest of the world on what can be done with renewable energy. These projects together will provide 11,500 megawatts of power. Again, that's the equivalent of about 33, 34, 35 power plants. And to have had those permitted in the course of 4 years is truly an extraordinary accomplishment on the part of the BLM and Terry Black and all of the people who have been involved in that effort. American-made clean energy is investing in rural communities as well and strengthening our national energy security. And nowhere is that happening faster, more effectively here in California. Of the 37 projects we've approved since 2009, Governor Brown, 17 of those are located right here in California. I told the governor in our meeting before this press conference that California was not only leading the United States of America, but leading the entire world today on what we're doing with renewable energy. Very proud of his efforts, and as Jim said, the 5,000 megawatts here in California on public lands are just part of the effort here, because it's really about 15,000 megawatts that have been approved over that course here within the state of California. Now, I want to say that these California solar projects underwent extensive and collaborative environmental reviews and public comment, and the developers are using innovative technologies to mitigate their potential impacts on wildlife, water, historical, cultural, and other resources. Just a quick word about each of these projects. McCoy Solar has agreed to purchase more than 4,500 acres of habitat to protect the desert tortoise, the burrowing owl, and the Mojave fringed toad lizard. For the Desert Harvest Solar Farm, the BLM added requirements to ensure that the plant will not contribute to the overdraft of the local groundwater basin. State and federal agencies have set up a joint compensation fund operated by the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation to assure that the impacts are mitigated. And indeed, last night in a meeting that I had with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, there were 100 conservation projects, Governor Brown, that the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation is working on throughout the state of California. The Desert Harvest Project will use a more efficient single-axis tracking system that allows the solar arrays to follow the sun, and we'll do a lot more. Let me finally just say that with California, we've engaged in a mutual landscape-level planning effort, the Desert Renewable Energy Conservation Plan, that will streamline these efforts for the long term, for the future, with some 2 million acres that will be identified as a sweet spot for solar, geothermal, and wind energy development into the future. And so the framework that we have put into place will continue to produce these kinds of projects for a long time into the future. In closing, today's action is part of President Obama's efforts to stand up the new energy future for the United States of America. And energy from these sources is very much at the heart of the President's all of the above energy agenda. It's been a privilege for me over the last 4 years to work across this country from sea to shining sea in all 50 states. But it's been a particular pleasure for me to work here in California as we have moved forward, and California being the point of the spear in resolving the energy future of the United States of America. And the progress that we've made with Governor Brown on renewable energy and so many other issues is just a wonderful part of what happens when you have the breaking down of silos that sometimes keeps government from working together. Here in California, what we did is it's the United States working side by side with the state, working side by side with industry and with the conservation community, and that's what has allowed us to get to the decision that we're making today. With that, I'd like to introduce the governor of the great state of California, Governor Jerry Brown.
It is a pleasure to be here with the Secretary. The collaboration between the state and federal government has been very impressive, very important. We have conflicts with the federal government from time to time, but with this Secretary, we've made tremendous progress. Now, I know we're in the age of skepticism and cynicism, and it's more newsworthy when something screws up, and we can see that almost every day. But it is significant and important when our common endeavors are successful, and we all love our private goodies, you know, whatever they may be. I don't have to enumerate them, that's basically what the economy is. But there are the fundamental investments in our water, in our energy, in protecting the natural environment. With climate change, with the level of population we have, with the impact of technology, we have to manage better. It's not a free lunch, it's not a free ride. There is a deep ideological division. There's a group of people who say climate change is a hoax. It's all made up by environmentalists who want to make money off it. That's crackpot, and I think it's crazy. We've had an administration that recognizes climate change and has supported the effort to build renewable energy plants. This is something that I started working on more than 30 years ago. Not in this particular respect, but renewable energy efficiency. This is really important stuff. I don't know how to say it any more forcefully than that we have a lot of challenges in this country. A lot of them. But climate change is on the way. And we got to do something about it. I was very glad when the Secretary said we're the world leader. I don't know. Germany's doing pretty good. Some of the Scandinavian countries are doing good. But if we are the world leader, good. We want to keep it that way. Now, a lot of people say that's the world leader. We don't like that. You know, we like minimum wage jobs, and we like, you know, regulatory-free activity. Well, sustainability requires that we deal with these tough ideological and bureaucratic issues. It's just hard stuff. Now, I come from some pioneers who came out here in the 1850s. It was pretty tough out there. They had to go through a lot of challenges. Our challenges are ideological, they're bureaucratic, and they're the environment itself in technology. So I'm just glad to be here where we see another 1,100 megawatts coming online. We're going to keep on going. And I think every year you're going to see the skeptics, the declinists, and the deniers losing ground. This is a battle for our state, for our country, for our whole future. And I'm totally committed to it. I know it isn't just California, it's the United States, it's also other countries, I'm going to China. And I know they're doing some excellent things, but they have to do some things also, some big, bold steps. And it's not easy. And it's very easy for people to push the ball down the road. Very easy. And, as one utility executive told me many years ago, I hope the damn thing doesn't blow under my watch. Well, we got to think about that. And that's why this renewable energy is so important. And isn't as exciting as most of the stuff that we have to read about. But it is. It's real exciting, and California is on the forefront. We're a leader in this. And yes, we got a lot of problems. We always will, because that's what life is. But we're solving some of the key energy problems, and we're doing it because we have an administration in Washington that's not going the other way, but it's working with us. It's an important collaboration, and I think today is significant as another step forward in securing our energy future, not just for us today and tomorrow, but for decades to come. That's the work, very important work that I feel that I'm able to do here, and I'm glad that all of you will be here too. Think it's important. So it's good, and we got to make sure that our federal partners are as aggressive as Secretary Salazar in energy and water and all the other things that will help with us, because we are partners and we can't get it done together for the future.
McCoy Solar. This is 650 megawatts. That's a big project. That's one of the largest in the world. Today is
13.
I support our Division of Oil and Gas They're excellent people, and I look for them to navigate the issues as we go forward. The fossil fuel deposits in California are incredible. The potential is extraordinary. But between now and development lies a lot of questions that need to be answered. And I feel confident that the people are in place in my administration to handle the issues as they come up. And they'll be decided based on science, based on common sense, and based on a deliberate process that listens to people, but also wants to take advantage of the great opportunities we have in the state. Yeah. Because you got that name in the green tag here?
It is a green tag, sir.
So what's your name and who are you from?
Mark Folke. I'm with EDF Renewable Energy. The Desert Harvest Project is actually our project, and we appreciate the support.
So you're not a member of the fourth state yet, right?
No, sir.
So let me get all the
press questions.
Journalists, and then I'll be glad to deal with your private sector. not that newspapers aren't for-profit businesses as well. Sometimes not as profitable as you. Energy companies. Unfortunately. Yes.
Not from the private sector. Chris Cordner with SNL Energy.
Well, they do better sometimes in the mainstream.
I wanted to ask you a question about there was some talk around the state of the union about a 40% RPS. And one of the things that really hasn't come to light is the cost of the current, the rate impact, rather, or bill impact of the 33%. RPS that's currently in place. So is that something of, I guess, you're interested in more hearing about the impact in the next few years?
Well, I'm very interested in costs. And, of course, I'm very interested in the costs of the conventional power plants. As you may know, there's a lot of costs that are being generated by existing plants and all the things that they entail. So, yeah, we got a 33.5% goal. We'll make it, I think, well before 2020, and we intend to go beyond that because I'm serious when I say we got to deal with climate change. You deal with climate change by reducing fossil fuel consumption, whether it's oil, gas, or coal. We have to, in a thoughtful way, move off fossil fuel. So, yes, we're going as much renewable as we can. But I'm certainly keeping an eye on the cost. There are a lot of reasons why costs are going up in the utility sector. Transmission lines, power plants that go offline and get very expensive when you have to fix them, and all sorts of other things that will add to the cost. Renewables are a small part of the cost structure of our current energy system. Yeah.
There seems to be pressure in the legislature recently with some bills about realignment and things like that. I'm not asking you to comment on legislation, but could you give an assessment of where you think, how well you think realignment is working, and if there's room for changes?
There's always room for changes. This is an incredibly complex change, brought on, by the way, in part by the pressure from the U.S. Supreme Court. So. And we're still under pressure to possibly reduce another 9,000. So we are witnessing calls to increase the number of people in prison, and we're under pressure to reduce the number of people in prison. And luckily, congregation is one of my specialties, so I feel I can deal with it. But we're looking at realignment. I've spent a lot of time. Spent several hours with some students at Stanford that have reviewed it. They have some ideas. Our Department of Finance has ideas. But I'm not ready to... I tell you this. Some counties do better than other counties. And the challenge here is that locking people up at state expense is a free good when people have a problem with criminal activity. And now we're saying, no, you have to handle criminal activity where you are. And so there's only so much room in the jails. Now, it turns out that 70% of the people in jails are not even convicted of a crime. This is pre-trial detention. So that's something I want to look at. You asked me about realignment. Pre-trial detention is an area that can be looked at. Different counties do it differently because San Franciscans and Modocians don't agree on how to handle these problems. Much less Bakersfeldians and Los Angelinos. So there's a lot of differences here, and realignment affects all 58 counties. We're working very closely with the sheriffs. I meet regularly with the police chiefs of California through their association. I meet with the California Probation Officers Association. So it is a work in progress. It's one driven by necessity, some of it by the federal government, some of it by finances, and some of it by the insight that just locking people up is not the only way to handle people who do things that are bad. That there are ways to handle people. And there is a lot of inertia just to put someone behind bars as opposed to trying other ways, supervision, education, drug treatment, daily reporting, flash incarceration. There's a lot of ways to do things. And that takes, at each county level, collaboratively working. And sometimes the different groups compete. The sheriff wants more money, and then the probation person, and then the police chief say, but we need more money because there are more people doing bad things. So there's a lot of people involved. A lot of moving parts. I'd say it's well on track. We're making progress, but we have to watch it very carefully because we're dealing with public safety, and I'm certainly not saying that we have a perfect situation. We don't have that prerogative that they have over there in Rome of infallibility. We have impeccability. No, peccability, I guess. That's the correct word. Yeah, we make mistakes. But we correct it as we go.
Can we ask yeah.
about
the Pope then, too?
What?
Can we ask
you
about the Pope?
About the Pope? Well, I'm glad he's a Jesuit. He's from Argentina, so that might give a broader perspective and see the world from the Southern Hemisphere. What the hell do I know? I thought Jesuits were not allowed to consider higher office. At least they weren't in my day.
Back on the Rory Carroll with Reuters. Back on the issue of fracking.
Didn't Reuters and Bloomberg somehow tie together?
Competitor.
Oh, it's Newsweek and Bloomberg. I get all you news sources confused. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering how you can reconcile your desire to fight climate change, your enthusiasm for renewable energy.
Yeah.
With what seems to be support for fracking in California and expansion of it. Some that supported you would like to see
well,
an outright ban on fracking in California.
Well, do you know how many people, how much oil is imported to keep our cars going? Do you know what percentage it is? It's around 98%. So now in California, can get around without using any gasoline. That's the time for no more oil drilling. Maybe, because maybe other people still drive. But we're importing oil from many places. It means you got to bring it in by ship or by truck or by pipeline, by something. So taking care of our own problems is a good thing. So if we need to have everybody driving around as we do, as most of the people all here, I think very few of you took part, maybe a few of you did. And so we got to get some oil. Now, you want to get the oil from Venezuela? You want to get it from the far... Where do you want to get it from? I mean, get it, 100 miles away. So, we're going to look at it. By the way, oil off the Long Beach, off the city of Long Beach, that put hundreds of millions of dollars into building necessary facilities at our Cal State University. Very important. In the Kern Basin, lots of oil resource. So, we want to get want to get the greenhouse gas emissions down, but we also want to keep our economy going. And that's that. That's that balance that's required. And we're not fighting the laws of nature. We're going to get on the side of nature. But there still will be a lot of people driving around for quite a long time. I mean, I don't know. We have 30 million vehicles in California. That's a lot of oil. So I think we have room to supply our need, even as we reduce oil consumption. We should be reducing it much faster than we are, and hopefully we can get some national policies to do that. But that still doesn't mean that in the meantime, there isn't oil under the ground in California that can't be made very useful. Now, that doesn't say anything about one of the rules of fracking, by the way. If you thought I'd give you any more information, you were not listening.
Last question.
Yes.
Thank you, Governor. Lisa Leff with the Associated Press. I wonder if you could share your thoughts on the online education bill that Senator Steinberg introduced today. You supported online education. This has a provision that would allow third parties to provide some of those classes. And I'd like to know what you think about that and what we mean for in particular for UC.
My thought on the bill. First of all, the only thing I know about the bill is what I read last night in the New York Times on the internet. Before I go to bed every night, I go to the New York Times and the Financial Times, FT.com. It calms me. Particularly if the markets are doing well. I have certainly discussed online. I've encouraged the Cal State to in the three projects they're doing in San Jose State. This is a very powerful technology. And I notice that every time I go to Google and I find out some obscure fact, like the fact that we had a new pope, I get a little beep about that about an hour ago. So we're in the world of online, and the university will be affected. The university, by some accounts, began with the book. It very much depends on the book. As the book transmogrifies or transforms into the screen, the university will change too. But it's been around, as the president of UC once told me, it's been around a lot longer than the state of California. So it's quite durable. But online is going to develop. I don't think we can foresee all the ways. I don't believe that bill is a finished product. And how this all is going to work through the politics, through the various issues that are going to come up here. But I think it's big. I think it's going to have an impact. I think it can save money. I think it can get kids out of graduating faster. And I'm excited about it. But how are we going to proceed? I think that's an open question. So I wouldn't jump the gun too quickly. This is something I'm pushing it. But I'm also talking to the faculty. I respect their role. When the linotypists back in the 60s were faced with new technology at the New York Times, they called a 65-day strike, which, by the way, launched the New York Review of Books. Any new technology is disruptive and will be introduced with accommodations. So we were proceeding, or we're listening to those affected, and I think it's going to move of its own. It'll move with based on policy, but it's also going to move based on the values that the technology generates. And so there are people who are going to make courses available. And some of those courses are going to be exciting, and the people who take them will be proven by the way the online course is developed to be highly competent in the subject matter. And when business and the rest of the world feels confident that an online course and a certification of the success of that course can be relied on, then that will have profound effects on how people get credits, degrees, and how the university operates. So, yeah, it's going to be, it'll be, there's big stuff here. But, you know, how long did it take? I think television was invented in the early 30s. It took a long while to get it going. So I can't tell you what, I don't know the world of, how quickly it's going to come in. So I'm following it, and, you know, we'll just have to see. All right? That's it?
That's it.
You seem like a very contented crowd here. Is there one more person there? That I should never take the last question. If I don't like it, I won't answer. But what do you think?
I'm just wondering your position on the carbon market link with Quebec, if that's something you support, right?
Yeah, well, that, I talked to some people in Quebec, so we're definitely exploring that. Somebody, I thought, I read somewhere, had some, what's the problem with that, do you know?
I think that some, the Senate Pro Tem and others want more information about the Western Canada Initiative, and
well,
I have concerns that they haven't really expressed.
They have consumed, they haven't expressed, so that's why it's hard for me to comment on it. That's what I thought. I've heard that, but we're going to get to the bottom of it. But we want to make this work. It's another, look, the new is never as easy as the status quo. Stagnation is an option, but it's not one I want to choose. So I'm pushing on a number of fronts, in education, in higher education, in water, in transportation, in energy. All these things are pitfalls, and so you have to take some risk. I just feel that at this age of my life, I'm ready to take bold action for whatever ways I can. So that's what I intend to do. And Captain Creed is like all these other things. I'm going to look at it, whether it's fracking or whether it's a low carbon fuel standard or anything else. We keep our eyes open, and we're not jumping on any ideological bandwagons. So we've got to take a close look at whether it's the Quebec connection or a fracking connection or anything else other than the ones that I've committed to. And we're moving full speed ahead on those, but even those, if somebody comes up with a good idea, I'll listen because I like ideas, and there's a lot of ideas in California. So, can you get any done?